This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, me, Matt Biddle, here with the spreadsheeting voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Matthew, how are you?
Not too bad, mate. Not too bad. It's been a while. We are returning. We, of course, took a mini break over the international break and the Easter weekend. But now we're back with all the goalkeeping goodness, as we like to say.
We are. It was. We did look at doing one, didn't we? But the timing just wasn't great. There were so many games across Easter. Obviously, not a great deal happening over the international break. It's amazing now as well how many League One clubs don't play on international break. That was never the case, whereas you look now and there's literally one or two games that go on, which is nice in a way. I know, having been in League One with Brentford, and you'd see those international breaks come up and all of the Prem and Champ lads getting their time off if they're not obviously involved with their international teams. And yeah, you're always a little bit envious. Whereas now I'd say that most League One teams do tend to get that bit of a break.
Yeah, it was a funny time. We did actually plan the podcast fully, and then at the 11th hour said, no, we're not going to do it. So the work was there, just the execution didn't quite come about. And if we're going to bring it back to goalkeeping, there we go.
There you go. That is nicely done, Matthew. But yes, it is very much the build-up now. So it's a funny time, this time of the year, because you've got, obviously clubs are now looking towards the summer window. It's, you know, the biggest window, of course. It's where the majority, certainly of goalkeeping, like permanent changes happen, season-long loans, etc. But as is always the case, and certainly the case this year in the Championship in particular, very few can plan knowing exactly where they'll be. So you've got this sort of funny period, and it always happens in April, where it's a lot of them will have two lists. It's like, well, if we're staying up, it's this. If we're going down, it's this. If we're going up, it's this. If we're staying in the league, it's this. So it is a, always find it a fascinating time. You have a lot of conversations, but it's still so early. It kind of gets to end of April, early May, and then suddenly it just takes off. But we're kind of in that in-between stage at the moment.
Yeah, funny stage. Those spreadsheets are all over the gaff. And actually, funny you mentioned that too, because I feel like just from speaking to various people within the game, it feels like it's been quite an arduous season all round for a lot of clubs. Very, very long, hard, tough season.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that, I don't know if it's different from normal. I think that you've always got, every year, and it always happens where the clocks change. That's always quite a big moment for me, where the clocks change and you can feel you're in the running, but it is the most important time of the season for the majority of clubs. But there is that sense of a little bit fatigue. I mean, the conditions over the last couple of weeks probably haven't helped, like gale force winds pretty much up and down the country at the weekend. But it is that one. It's like, look, can you keep your focus, keep your work rate up for another few weeks, and then you get that summer break. But it does, yeah, I'd agree with that. Speaking to a lot of clubs, it does feel like a lot are getting to that stage where they are, you know, looking forward to the summer.
Good stuff. Okay, we have plenty coming up. Shall we get on with the show?
Let's do it.
Okay, starting in the Premier League, Richard, you mentioned her there as well. Well, you didn't mention her by name, but Storm Kathleen wreaking havoc across the land this weekend. So no secret, really, that we saw a number of similar moments occurring. One of those in the game between Wolves and West Ham. It was Wolves 1, West Ham 2, and the winner scored by James Ward-Prowse, straight in from a corner.
Yeah, tough moment for Jose Sarr. And do you know what? Speaking to a lot of the lads this weekend, and I'm sure that every goalkeeper listening in will agree, wind, gale force wind, that is the worst possible conditions that a goalkeeper can play in. Like, you don't mind rain. You can deal with rain. If anything, when it rains, it makes the pitch a little bit slicker. Through balls run through, and that's fine. Even, you know, whether it's cold, whether it's hot, okay, if it's a bit warmer, the ball travels a bit further and faster and whatever else. But yeah, wind, it's a killer, especially when I found, anyway, when I played, if it goes directly straight down the pitch. Because when the wind's with you, it's great. You get an extra 10 yards on your kick-in. But shots that come against that wind, they move all over the place. And so many situations, I had so many games on Saturday, and the amount of situations I saw, and you could see on the screen how the ball was moving. It just wasn't a true flight. And so many got caught out this weekend. And yeah, I think Jose Sarr was one of them. I mean, it's one of them. It's a horrible ball to deal with when it's whipped in like that under the crossbar, because he's got somebody on him, and you can see what he's tried to do, where he's tried to keep that bit of space by having the arm on the person in front of him, keep that bit of space, and then collect the ball. But you could see that he's just left it a touch too long, misjudged it ever so slightly, and it's a killer. The moment then he realises he can't get back, you know, it's a soft goal. It's one that he'll be very frustrated with. But you have to feel that the wind has played a bit of a part here, because ordinarily this is that one. You hold the player off, you take the step back, you collect the corner and off you go. But you could just see he had that moment of panic where he suddenly realised, ah, I've not got this anymore. And it just sailed over his head into the far corner.
There was a late equaliser in that game scored by Max Kilman. However, it was disallowed for offside because apparently Lukas Fabianski had his vision impeded by the sub Tawanda Chirewa. What did you make of this one?
This is such a grey area, isn't it now? I mean, the amount of goals that we spoke about on this podcast, and we ordinarily do it based on would the keeper have saved it, or would there have been a chance of saving it? It's so tough because, I mean, look, it would have been the world's greatest ever save if he got across and got to the ball. And the player that's actually on the goalkeeper didn't actually necessarily do anything wrong. Corner comes in. It's quite an unusual setup in that obviously they don't have the men on the post. So technically in the second phase of play, he is, of course, offside. So then if they are going to make it black and white and say, well, he's in the goalkeeper's way, therefore it is offside, you can understand the decision. But you can also, I can fully, fully understand the disappointment and frustration from Wolves because, yeah, look, there was nothing that Fabianski was going to be able to do about that goal. It's a ball whipped in, good header, into the corner. And the player on the goalkeeper, yeah, technically he's offside. Yeah, technically he's in the goalkeeper's vision. But, yeah, this is one, as I say, such a grey area. And I really don't know how they can ever change this rule so it does become black and white. It will always be that judgment call. And I guess this one in particular falls on the side of, yeah, Fabianski isn't going to save this. I'm keen to hear your thoughts on this one, actually.
Pretty much the same, I guess. I mean, letter of the law, he is offside. And if it is your team, your goalkeeper, you are going to be calling for that to be offside. But yes, he's never saving that. But then you can't call it, can you? Because who knows, he might have pulled off an absolute worldie beyond worldies, like you say, the greatest save of all time, and saved it. So again, I guess open to interpretation.
Indeed. I just don't think it's a rule they can ever make black and white. That's the thing. Or if they are going to make it black and white, because even that, it's, you know, what is impeding vision? If he's a foot to the right, and you know, we can say that Fabianski can definitely see where the header's coming from, but even that, you're never going to be able to fully gauge it based on cameras. So I don't know where they go with that rule, because this is going to create so much more controversy going forward. We've seen so many moments this season of similar ones, similar discussions, similar arguments. I just don't know how you ever make that black and white.
And that's where interpretation should be what it should be, right? That's where the ref can make a call without needing to look at a monitor and just say, no, in that moment, I didn't feel like that player was impeding your vision. Goal given, let's crack on. Anyway, let's crack on ourselves, shall we? We'll move on. Actually, in fact, no, we won't crack on, because we haven't had an opportunity to mention this the past two times that this has happened, but Lukas Fabianski in the game with Newcastle over the Easter weekend came on for the 18th time in his career. Actually, that's not entirely accurate. Basically, the stat is that Lukas Fabianski has been directly involved in a substitution 18 times in his career, be that him coming on, be that him coming off for either an injury or a sending off or a retirement, whatever it may be. But yes, that is just a remarkable record.
It really is. Do you know what? And again, I know I'll always throw this back at you in terms of what have we got to compare it to, or what other examples are that. This has to be a world record, because I think back over, you know, I'll go back over my career. I came off, you know, in the few hundred games that I played, even including like youth team and reserves and whatever else, I think I came off once, maybe twice, and I think I came on twice, and that was over a 15-year period. So we're talking four times I either came off or on. So 18 times over, I know he's obviously played a little bit longer, so we're talking probably 20 years, but yeah, 18 times. That's unbelievable. And there might have been some we've missed, by the way. Again, I don't know. I know you do your research very thoroughly, but there may have been some we missed as well. But 18 times has got to be a record.
Yeah, incredible. One of those times was his final game for Poland, where he came off to almost a lap of honour, I think, or a guard of honour, sorry. So you can kind of give him that one, but the others are all completely legit, either brought on or off because of something happening in the game, be that an injury or a red card. We'll go over to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, where it was Tottenham 3, Nottingham Forest 1. And Matt Sells did his best to repel Spurs in this game. A good block at 1-0 down from Brennan Johnson. They equalised moments later there, Forest. And very good saves in the second half from Pierre-Emile Højbjerg and Heung-Min Son. A good performance from Sells, arguably his best performance yet in a Forest shirt.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. No, I thought there were some top saves here. As you mentioned, the top hand, bit of deflection on this one. One that, and I hate the expression, he would expect to save, but I think that is one that he would have, you know, fancied himself to save, but makes a good save, good parry, good area. I thought the other two saves in particular were very, very good. Interesting the spread from the cross in the, and we talk about this a lot in terms of goalkeeper's set position or starting position on a cross. He's very, very tight to his post, which again, isn't necessarily right or wrong. I think that some goalkeepers prefer that. Some take a more advanced position, although we'll be talking about Petrovic shortly and where that can sometimes let you down as well. But very tight to his post. As the ball comes in, what he does incredibly well is read the situation. He can see that in his peripheral vision, there's someone there that's going to try and tap it in from 4 or 5 yards. And the way in which he turns off the post, spreads in that moment, makes himself so, so big. Brilliant save this, and arguably the best save, just purely for movement, agility, speed, the way he got back down to his left when he's moving ever so slightly to his right, back down to his left to get a good hand off the post and wide. I thought it's a fantastic save.
Over to Goodison Park, Everton 1, Burnley 0, and it's time for one of these.
Bada boom, bada bing, it's only a keeper.
Yes, we saw an unusually high number of these this weekend, didn't we? Some ending up in goals, others just about avoiding embarrassment. And for Aaron Murich, it was sadly the former, looking to play out, caught out by Dominic Calvert-Lewin, a goal that every goalkeeper doesn't really like to see.
No, we've seen probably more of these, I would guess, this season than any other season. And I think there's a couple of reasons for it. One is that goalkeepers are now very much prompted to wait until the last second. The whole idea of drawing the striker in, then looking to play, of course, you're taking one of their players out of the equation. So I get that. It's a bit of a strange one in that he had so much time. And what I would say is that I don't know what he was looking for, because you can see that he's looking. There wasn't anything on. And you do wonder at what point does a trigger go off in your mind to be like, okay, I've got to go long. And I know it's one of them that then that'll frustrate a manager and so on and so forth. But you actually look at the picture. He's got a good few seconds where he's dribbling the ball out. He's looking. Nothing's becoming apparent, which isn't great from the Burnley players. I'm sure there'll be a frustration from the manager that they're not showing or not giving him those angles to look to bounce it in and play out and what have you. But I just wonder at what point does that trigger go off and you just say, I just need to go long. And in the end, he didn't actually even go long. He still tried to play. And you look at where he was looking to play, I don't know who he'd have played it to. You know, even if he'd have executed the pass, I still think he's playing it into trouble. So it is a tricky one because I get it. And a lot of goalkeepers listening in who have managers that are very insistent on looking to play essentially at all costs. And they will accept a moment or two like this a season, knowing that they're trying to play a certain style. But I just think in this situation, if there isn't anything obvious on, you can see in your peripheral vision that someone's coming to close you down, there just has to be that trigger just in time so you can get the ball away.
Sheffield United 2, Chelsea 2, and a tale of two anticipators, we'll call this. The first equaliser for Sheffield United scored by Jaden Bogle. That involved Georgi Petrovic, of course, and then the goal to put Chelsea 2-1 up scored by Noni Madueke. That involved Ivo Gerbic, who of course had a little moment in midweek as well at Liverpool.
Yeah, well, I suppose the expression that we use a lot in goalkeeping, and certainly going back to when I used to train and play, that would always be a thing from the coach. You know, don't guess. And naturally, it's a real fine line between reading a situation and guessing, you know, because you can see what both have tried to do. And both very similar in different ways, but both very similar in that Petrovic, in that moment, he's thinking 9 times out of 10, they're going to look to fire this across. If I can block out the cross, then of course I'm being effective for my team. But you can see his weight is on his right side. He's ready to go down. And when the ball then comes back on his left side, he's just not able to get a foot to it. And yeah, frustrating goal to concede. Similarly with Gribic as well, where as he's cut inside, again, his weight is on his right hand side. He's expecting the shot to go across him. And the moment it's fired, side back to his left hand side, there's just nothing he can do, and he just essentially goes down on one knee. So look, in a perfect world, both of these, it would be the same advice given, I guess, and young goalkeepers listening in, even if you have an idea as to where it may go, you have to try and stay as neutral as you possibly can until the last second. And if I'm sure if both do this, certainly Petrovic, I think, makes a save down to his left. Look, whether Grbic makes a save or not, I'm not sure, but certainly he'd have been able to get a dive away and at least get that bit closer to it. But it is, again, a real fine line between purely guessing and trying to read that situation.
What will be the discussion there on the training ground today, tomorrow, whenever it may be? Is that poor goalkeeping for you?
Yeah, look, it'll be one that goalkeeper coaches, when they go through the, you know, the debrief, it will be one where the advice will be, look, you have to stay in a set position. You know, it's even, and it is tricky because sometimes you make your greatest ever saves when you read it correctly and you go that tiny bit early and you make the save. And we'll be on the podcast lauding situations like that. So I fully understand why goalkeepers do it. And ultimately, a lot of what you're doing is reading situations, you know, not just shots, through balls, whatever it might be. You're constantly a step or two ahead. So It is a tricky one. The advice they'll be given is that hold that position for as long as you can, and go at the very last second. That will be the advice. So because of that, yeah, it will go down as both could have done a little bit more in this situation. Again, whether Grbic saves it or not, we don't know. I certainly think with Petrovic, it'll be one that frustrates him. But going back to what I said a minute ago about Sells, where Matt Sells will be really tight to the post, he wouldn't concede this, but of course he won't be quite so effective in terms of cutting out crosses. Now you can see that Petrovic, and we see this a lot, we talk about it a lot about the Brighton goalkeepers, who probably set the trend initially of taking up really advanced positions on wide balls, which, again, if you were to ask the data people involved in this, I'm sure over the course of a season, that will prove more productive and you can be a lot more proactive and effective than if you are hugging your post. So I get why. But of course, naturally, you're going to have one or two moments like this. That being said, again, even in theory, if you take up quite an advanced position and you're quite neutral, you can still get back to your near post and make that save. But there is always a tendency to look to read it.
Okay, and just wrapping up the rest of the action in the Premier League. So a fourth Prem game in a row for Bart Verbruggen. Interesting this, because that previous to the weekend was unprecedented this season. In fact, prior to Wednesday's draw with Brentford, both he and Jason Steele had only managed two in a row before trading places. So this was his fifth game overall. So I guess the question would have to be asked as to whether Roberto De Zerbi has finally decided on a firm number one. There were silky skills from Stefan Ortega in Man City's 4-2 triumph over Crystal Palace. So a nice cheeky Cruyff to evade Jean-Philippe Mateta, which, funnily enough, had everyone clamouring that he shouldn't be a number two, as per the commentators and all the articles thereafter. Liverpool's opener in the 2-2 draw with Manchester United. So nothing said about this, but just keen to hear your views on Andre Onana, just from a set and technique perspective in trying to keep out that effort, or the goal, in fact, from Luis Diaz. And not an enjoyable game for goalkeepers at Villa Park. So six shots, six goals, and no saves in the 3-3 draw between Aston Villa and Brentford. And just to chuck into the mix, a spawny goal of the week contender from Mathias Jorgensen in that one as well.
Yes, I did think about the spawny goal of the week. I knew that would raise a comment or two from your fine self. Well, you know what? Just to go through a few of them, we'll start with Onana. Look, I think that Dalot being so close really, really had an impact here. But it was a strange one. Like you say, nothing's going to be said. There's certainly no error, given how close in it is and the speed at which the ball comes to him. But the technique was unusual. Like, he's almost kind of swatted at it. To an extent, it was, and you do wonder if Dalot isn't there, if there's a bit more confidence in really going through the ball and trying to get a good parry away. But I do just think with Dalot, it's kind of got in that perfect spot from a Liverpool's perspective, right between the two of them, and neither of them really commit to it. Again, it's happening at such pace, so certainly no error there, but it was a slightly unusual technique, and I do think it might have been a bit different if Dalot wasn't there. Verbruggen, in fact, I wanted to touch on Verbruggen and Raya, because they both made top saves in this. Obviously, the one that David Raya made has been mentioned a little bit more, and I love this save. This was, you know, that classic shot from an angle that's arcing into the far top corner, and you look at the speed of his feet. He gets a good couple of steps in, great explosion, two hands initially, knows he can't get two to it, so then goes with the top hand. Just technically excellent. Really, really good save. Parries it wide for a corner. And Verbruggen too, to his left-hand side. It frustrated me watching this. And again, we're not going to talk too much about commentators this week, which is nice. But again, the fact that he's made the save and there wasn't anything mentioned at all. And it's a top save because he's moving to his right. Had to get back to his left. Full stretch. Gets a big hand to it. Gets it around the post. I thought it was an excellent save. And yeah, to finish on Ortega for this particular section, I mean, it was brilliant. I mean, do you know what? The awareness in that moment, because it's a split-second decision where it's the ball's kind of broke, it's in an awkward position, is the striker going to get there or not? But the second he realises it isn't, he can get a foot to it. You kind of got two choices. One is to just swipe at it and just hope you get it away, which is, I think, what 99% of goalkeepers would do, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that. But to have the awareness, the confidence to be able to drag it back, because it's such a difficult skill as well. Given the angle of the ball, it's not easy to nail the Cruyff. That could so easily have gone wrong. But how calm he was in that moment to do that, keep possession. Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. And look, this is again where, because I know when Ortega came in, and you know, credit to him in that we don't speak about him all that much, because whenever he steps in, there's so little difference. You know, Ederson, one of the best in the world, has been fantastic season after season, yet to have a number two that can go so long without playing, and yet when he steps in, there's so little difference because of just how good he is at what Man City need him to do. Again, huge credit to Man City, the recruitment department, and huge credit to him.
Yeah, it really was such a find, wasn't it? Considering that he had been at Arminia Bielefeld for the past 5 years, and fair to say that a number of people in football and goalkeeping weren't even aware of him.
Yeah, it was. I remember when it happened, and it was a bit like, okay, you kind of do a bit of research into it. Like, this is a really odd bit of recruitment. Then you do wonder, obviously, they've got other goalkeepers there, whether it be the likes of, you know, Zach Steffen previously, or of course, Muric previously, and all these others that have kind of been there. But credit to him, he's not only nailed down that number two slot, there will be, every time he plays, people will ask, like, surely there's another Premier League team that could come in and bring him in as their number one. I'm sure there'll be a few that would be open to that. But he's got a really nice role there. And certainly whenever he steps in, he shows just how good he is.
All these very good goalkeepers, Richard, just out there that people aren't aware of.
There you go, hidden.
Just to finish, we should just mention, and I don't know about you, as soon as I saw this pop up during the game yesterday, I thought, oh crikey, Twitter is going to go into meltdown. And it did, because Andre Onana was pictured rubbing Vaseline on his gloves, which some people thought is just an incredible thing for a goalkeeper to do.
Yeah, Vaseline on gloves. I wonder how many times we've mentioned this now. Over the years, it's a good few times that we spoke about this, because, I mean, it doesn't make sense. But it does at the same time. Goalkeepers that have done it know exactly how good it can be. And I've got no doubt it's because of the conditions at Old Trafford. You can see that it was not the nicest. Obviously, the typical rain that you get in Manchester, it looked like it was pretty wet throughout. And it can be the hardest thing with those balls, where they can be slippy as anything. Doesn't matter what gloves you've got. Yet, for whatever reason, Vaseline does seem to have a really positive impact in the rain. So I think Onana thought of that. And look, talk about attention to detail, given the conditions, because I don't think it's a usual thing that he does, but I think given the conditions, he's realised that's going to give him that bit more grip on his gloves. So I don't mind this. You know, that would have been something he would have been testing in training or whatever else. I know we spoke to Kasper Schmeichel about this before, and I think certain conditions to have Vaseline on your gloves, if that does help with that bit of grip, then yeah, great work to him in terms of detail.
It is the EFL overview. Starting in the Championship, where Mads Hermansson summoned his inner Muric to allow Adam Stansfield to steal in and equalise for Birmingham at Leicester. The Dane caught by the striker as he attempted to play out, but thankfully spared blushes as the Foxes bagged a winner late on in the second half. Alex Palmer unlucky to see his penalty save followed up by that dastardly Andre Vidigal as Stoke fought back to draw with West Brom. Potentially a very good save uncredited in the first half as well, after denying Milan Manhurf one on one. It looked as though he may have turned wide with the tiniest toe from Sayed Haksabanovic. Not recognised, however, and neither was a fine fingertip onto the bar from James Beadle in a huge win for Sheffield Wednesday at QPR. Lucas Anderson kept out, just like Sam Greenwood was in the previous fixture with Middlesbrough. That one from the spot touched onto the post by Beadle, but so quick and so fine that everyone missed it, bar, of course, the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Spawny Goal of the Week contender for Wednesday in that win as well. JD Gassama stretching out a leg to ricochet beyond Asmir Begovic, and performance of the weekend possibly going to Max O'Leary of Bristol City. First clawing out Dan Ballard's glancing header and then doubling down with a double-double save. Standing strong to see off Joby Bellingham and Jack Clark before arching acrobatically to agonise Adil Alchiche following the denial of Dan Neil one-on-one.
Yeah, well, I think we have to start with Max O'Leary. I thought this was a fantastic display. And that's what I wrote down. I wrote down double save, and then after that, an even better double save. You know, I thought that, yeah, look, he's made... certainly the first double save is top, but I think the second one, the speed at which he gets up and gets fingertips to it, just brilliant, brilliant save, and certainly caps off another good week for him. I think he got Player of the Month for Bristol City last month, and he's been in fine form, and long may it continue. Certainly seems to be flourishing under Liam Manning, and I know Bristol City, it's going to be probably a mid-table finish, but I'm really interested to see how they do going into next season. And certainly if Max can keep up this type of form, I think they'll be in a good spot. As you mentioned, felt sorry for Alex Palmer's brilliant penalty save, because he actually waits until the player strikes the penalty. So he's not tried to read this too early. He's reacted off the penalty, so to get down to his right and get a big hand on it, top save. And nothing more frustrating than when it just breaks to the player that's taken it and he knocks it in and wheels off celebrating. So I did feel for him there. Max Manson, yeah, very... No, do you know what? I say similar to Muric. It's not similar to Muric in that, you know, he's obviously played the goal kick, come back to him. He's not got quite so much time. And again, we're going to see so many of these over time. And I think it's going to become more accepted. It's still going to be frustrating for the goalkeeper, of course, when it happens. But go back to my point, when you're being told and asked to really draw players in and wait until that last second to take the player out of the game, naturally there's going to be the odd moment where somebody does get a tackle in, a foot in, and then you're just reliant on where that deflection goes. And as you say, unfortunately for him, it went in the back of the net. Thankfully for him, they went on and got a winner, so I'm sure it'll be quickly forgotten. And James Beadle, as you mentioned, it'd be really interesting if he'd have made these two saves that you spoke about, the penalty save in particular and the save against QPR, whether they'd have happened in the Premier League. Just given, obviously, the Championship, it's still top level in terms of a lot of the tech and cameras and whatever else. But yeah, Premier League, you've got so many more angles, so many more cameras. You can pretty much, almost like cricket, you can pretty much determine, you know, with the, what's it called in cricket, where they do the whole edge cam thing or whatever it is. Yeah, you can pretty much know for definite. And I'm convinced he gets a touch to both of these. But as you say, I read the reports today, I read the reports the other day, and no one's actually mentioned a fingertip on the penalty or a fingertip onto the bar. I think ITV might have touched on it very briefly. But yeah, it's one of them where he does them in the Prem, probably gets a lot of love, but not in the Championship, unfortunately for him.
And you said we weren't going to talk about commentators too much on this pod, so we won't. But can I just ask you about the winner for Norwich City against Ipswich Town, scored by Marcelino Nunes, the free kick that evaded Vaslav Hladký?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, okay. I was actually going to have like a week off talking about commentators, but now you've reminded me of this. Do you know what? They just go back to the studio, and look, I know there's probably people listening to this pod that really like this commentator, but I do struggle with Chris Sutton. Really, really struggle with Chris Sutton. So, you know, they went back to him. The actual commentators themselves have sort of deliberated between themselves, couldn't really make out what had happened, couldn't really give it from a goalkeeper's point of view. And look, you know, let's talk about the goal first, and then we'll talk about the comments. But from Hladký's point of view, will he be disappointed? Yeah, of course. You know, he's gone with two in the wall, which I get. It's a good 30 yards out. He backs himself to be able to cover the whole goal. It's a really interesting strike in that it struck very little spin on the ball. So it's kind of moving in the air. It starts out quite central, and then it drifts to the right-hand side. It's almost like a poor man's version of Roberto Carlos back in the day, to an extent, because the movement on the ball probably wasn't what you'd expect. So you've got that where at first it's coming towards you, then it starts to drift away. It's then getting that quick step in, exploding to your left, and probably going with one hand to put it around the post. Now, in this moment, he's not quite able to get the step in that he wants to get in. doesn't really explode. He goes with two hands and he gets the two on it and he pushes it onto the post and it goes in. So, look, could he save it? Yes, he could. And I think that if he's that tiny bit quicker, explodes, goes one hand, I think it's not comfortable, but I think that he still gets a good hand and he puts it around the post. So that's effectively what's happened. It looked like it was a very windy day there, as it was across the country, and I'm sure that hasn't helped either. But, you know, they go to Chris Sutton. What was the words he used? But it was, again, just so damning. You know, he's had a shocker. That was it. I think he's had a shocker. It's terrible. It's this, it's that. And it's like, again, there's just no detail. He just get the negativity towards Lagki, who's had a top season on the whole, you know, for Ipswich, being, you know, a key part to what they've done, and that he's had to be, having Christian Walton behind him to manage to keep him out to this point, has been very impressive. But yeah, just the way they were so damning about it, I just thought, again, that's fine, but give some detail. Just explain. And in fairness to, I think it was David Prutton, who is like the host of the show, and he's quite good for this, in that he'll often say, I'm not a goalkeeper and we don't have a goalkeeper on the panel, but what do you think? You know, and then of course you just get ridiculous opinions from people that have no idea. But the fact that he always says that, you can't help but feel he'd love to go to a goalkeeper at that point and actually get some proper feedback. So he almost does it with a bit of embarrassment. You know, look, we don't have a goalkeeper here, but go on, what do you guys think? And then there you go, oh, it's a shocker, it's this, it's that. And you're just like, oh, okay, here we go.
Into League One, where there was another decent double save, this time from Sam Tickle in a stalemate between Wigan and Port Vale. James Plant left feeling green after his deflected drive was stopped by the England man's legs, whose left hand was enough to parry the rebound from Bailey De Pipa. Dan Grimshaw continuing a fine campaign for Blackpool as they beat Cambridge 1-0, flying across his goal to slap away a Ghassan Ahadmé header just after the restart, and then sticking out a vital shin to prevent a late Elias Kachunga equaliser. And just moving slightly for the EFL Trophy final, it was contested by League One teams, so we'll allow it. Jed jumping for joy, but a fairy tale far from it, for Franco left feeling the pain and perhaps the full force of old Kathleen. So it had been a solid game up to then for the Argentinian, but a bonkers final few minutes in the final 5 minutes of normal time saw Harrison Burrows floating across, which somehow found its way over the head of Rabizzoli and into the record books as the trophy winner for the partying posh.
Yeah, well, let's start with Sam Tickle and Daniel Grimshaw. Yeah, great double save, Sam Tickle, another top performance. It's interesting. I do read all the reports of pretty much every game, and you can see with Sam Tickle the amount of love he has from Wigan supporters and the Wigan faithful. You know, a young goalkeeper to step in, play a full season, not really have a dip. You know, one or two games here and there, but not really have a dip across the whole season. Massively impressive. Brilliant double save this. First one with his feet. Again, it's the speed at which he gets up and gets down to his left to make the second save. It's a top, top save, and was fully deserving of all the plaudits he got, not just after, but even during the game. The amount of players that came up to him and slapped him on the head in celebration. But I thought that was an excellent save. And Daniel Grimshaw, as you mentioned, brilliant spread in particular. And a Superman-esque save on the line, where, again, we talk a lot about how goalkeeping isn't always textbook. You sometimes have to think outside the box, and he certainly did here, where he's running across his line, realizes the only way he can keep this out is effectively to dive forwards and to parry the ball to safety. Just really good awareness, and what's the word that I'm looking for here? He's conjured up something. Maybe we'll go with that. A bit of wizardry to make the save. Very good. And yeah, we'll finish this particular section with Rabizzoli, and I felt so sorry for him, because as you mentioned, big occasion, big game, played a very good game, and for this to happen at the very end, this is how cruel goalkeeping can be sometimes. And the truth is, I've watched this a few times, as you mentioned, the wind has done him no favours here at all. And actually, where the ball goes in, when you consider that this lad's crossed the ball for a start, so he isn't obviously aiming there, he's crossed the ball, it's very obvious that he's done that. But for it to go as high as it did with pace and literally drop in a postage stamp in the top corner, like, what are the chances? It's one of those moments I feel as a goalie that afterwards you must just think, like, what have I done wrong to deserve this? He didn't mean it. He meant it to go about 10 yards further forwards towards his strikers. But for it to go at pace into the top corner with the amount of dip, because the only way that Rabizzoli actually saves this is effectively if he is in the top corner itself. He can't get there before it gets to the top corner, if that makes sense. Because if it's a bit flatter, he might be able to get fingertips a yard or two in front of that and tip it over or tip it wide. But it dips right in that far corner, and he's given it a good go. He hasn't actually moved his feet all that badly. You know, he's moved his feet to an extent, and you can tell he's just a little bit lost at that point and just can't quite get a hand to it. So it's a horrible, horrible moment. And at the same time, I think if he saves it, it goes down as a world-class save. Now, of course, people are going to say it's an error. And yeah, I guess, you know, the fact that it's struck from 40-odd yards and it's gone in the top corner, of course, it has to go down as an error. But I also think if you put every goalkeeper in this situation, last 5 minutes of a game, and they're facing a ball like this, he's certainly not going to be the only one that concedes this goal. There's going to be a hell of a lot of goalkeepers, certainly myself included. You know, when I was playing, this would have beaten me, I think. And I think that it would have beaten a lot of goalkeepers that are listening into this pod now. So, yeah, long story short, I feel absolutely gutted for him, because this is, for me, where goalkeeping sometimes just isn't fair.
And finishing in League Two, where there was plenty going on. It felt like it was one of those days for Jack Bycroft of Swindon. 7 saves against Barrow, 1 cleared off the line and another rolling into his hands after his defender had almost handed the home side an equaliser. The touch wide from Emil Aqua, certainly the star attraction in the 2-0 win though. On the flip side, Nick Townsend did all he could to keep Newport in their game with Grimsby. Not to be, as the Mariners made it a welcome win with Jake Eastwood in for his first start since late October. Timotei Lotuta keeping up a very impressive record at Doncaster since signing on loan from Hull. The stats now stand at 13 played, 9-1, 3 drawn and just 1 defeated, with 4 clean sheets on the spin. He helped create the opener in a 3-0 mauling of Morecambe 2. A huge throw set Hakeeb Adelican on his way to provide the cross for Luke Molyneux's tidy finish. Luke Ashby-Hammond saving a pen from George Thompson, saying oh no to Abraham Odo with the striker clean through, and then brilliantly reacting to tip Anthony O'Connor Connor's point-blank effort over the bar. Notts County beating Harrogate 3-0. Jackson Smith rivaling Luca and O'Leary for that coveted performance of the weekend. First acrobatically tipping over Rob Apter's fierce drive, then expertly touching Reece McAleer's free kick onto the bar before quickly shuffling across his line to pat onto the post from Apter again in the second half. Walsall running out 3-1 victors at Tranmere, and Bradford back in form thanks largely to stopper Sam Walker, who threw his name into the hat for save of the weekend. Gillingham's Connor Masterton kept out due to riveting reactions from the 32-year-old. That was at 0-0. The Bantams went on to win by a solitary goal.
Yeah, well, I think we'll start with Walker, because I wrote down, and I put it in brackets, David De Gea really reminded me of like a classic David De Gea save. Header from 5-6 yards, and the way in which he's gone top hand, you know, the speed of movement to go top hand. I actually watched this game. I watched quite a few of these games live, actually. I have them, of course, got my 12 screens on a Saturday, and I did have a few League Two games. So a few of these ones that we're talking about, I did see live. And when I saw this save straight away, I was like, wow, that is top. And they showed it again, and you can see perfect position on the line. He's a big guy as well. Gets himself great set position. The header's going to his left, a good few yards to his left-hand side, and the speed at which he moves and gets fingertips to it. I thought this was an outstanding save. And I was watching watching the Notts County game, and after the game I thought, well, he has to be League 2 Team of the Week. I actually haven't seen who got League 2 Team of the Week, but after seeing some of these other performances, I think, as you mentioned, there's two or three that are certainly in the mix, but I thought Luke Ashby-Hammond was superb on the day. Mentioned penalty save. I think it was 9 saves he made in total. It was interesting. The XG actually had Harrogate, that they should have won that game, according to the XG, and yet Notts County run out 3-0 winners. So that probably tells you all you need to know about his performance. But the reaction save he made late on, really close in. Just mentioned Walker's reaction save. This is every bit as good as that. 2-3 yards out. The speed at which he gets up to his right to get fingertips to it. Brilliant, brilliant save. Jack Bycroft, yet another very impressive performance from him. Really good save in particular, low to his right. And yeah, interesting moment, as you say, playing out. Defender loses the ball. Just one of those common errors, really. And then the ball kind of ends back up in his hands. You haven't had a chance to see this. It's worth logging on to see this. It's when you know your luck's in. And not that he did anything wrong at all, but when the defender made the mistake that he did, and for the ball to land back in the arms of a goalkeeper. One of those nice moments that you sometimes have as a goalkeeper. I thought Smith was excellent. I mean, we spoke about Jackson Smith several times now on the show, but really, really powerful. The save in particular, free kick, the speed and the power, just outstanding, and certainly keeping up his good run at Walsall. And lastly, Lotitala. Watched this game live as well, and the save he made down to his right-hand side was superb. So ball come back inside. It's that classic one where you're turning off the post and you have to go back the way you came, and the speed at which he did it. I thought this was an excellent save, and the throw for the goal. And he was throwing it all afternoon, got quite the arm on him. Certainly that throw that led to the goal. a good 40, 50, 60 yards. It was, yeah, hell of an arm. And he didn't actually really have any run-up either because he was at the edge of the box already looking to play. Couldn't see anything on in terms of playing out short or kicking it. And it was just like a standing throw. You know, normally it'd be 3-4 steps and launch it. Standing throw, and it's gone well over the halfway line. And I can only assume it's wind-assisted. If not, then he certainly does have some superhuman powers.
You've also given him an extra 20 yards there. 40, 50, 60 yards. It's quite a big difference between 40 and 60, Richard.
That's true.
Which one was it?
That's true. Okay, well, it's good. The good thing is that you edit this podcast. So I'm sure that by the time this goes out, you've just chosen one of them. And that's it. That's what I'm hoping. Clean Sheet Club. Right, the season is winding down. It's heating up. Who is going to be top of the pile? It is, of course, Clean Sheet Club. We start in the Premier League. Jordan Pickford, Piggy in the middle. Martin Dubravka, as clean as Zelina. David Raya, one off a siren. Into the Championship, Mike Cooper, welcome back. Angus Gunn, firing on all cylinders. Ainsley Pears, Concordian keeper. Gavin Bazunu, Heward at Ewood. Lee Nichols, Big Blank, Senny Dieng, 5 and 6, James Beadle, framing it nicely, Anthony Patterson, 3 and 4, Max O'Leary, double-double, Dan Backman, top draw, Freddie Woodman, 5 and 7, and into League One, Dan Grimshaw, back-to-back, Nathan Baxter, Baxter's back, Jamie Cumming, 8-4, none against, Viliami Sinsalo, Yespo, Lee Burge, tally trebled, Sam Tickle, ever-present, Connor Ripley, so is he, and into League Two, Radek Vitek, Blumenek, Tom Booth, hat-trick of stalemates. Alex Bass, stopping Salford. Jack Bycroft, beating Barrow. Sam Walker, seventh heaven. Michael Kelly, hokey cokey. Jake Eastwood, welcome back, Mark 2. Timotei Lotutala, one off a siren, Mark 2. Luke Rashby-Hammond, speaking the part.
Very good, Richard. Very good. Would you like to hear some mind-blowing information?
Go on. Do we have a new leader?
We have a new leader. So it's all the same names, but because it's been a little while since we last recorded, and when we last recorded, Will Norris was top of the pile and Ian Melier was just behind him. At the time, Will Norris had 18, Ian Melier had 17. As things stand, Will Norris still has 18, Ian Melier still has 17, Norris in 42, Melier in 39, but with 18 in 41... It's Lucas Jensen.
Wow. Wow. That is quite the turn up. I'm surprised there's not been headlines. Lincoln have been flying, in fairness. They've been unbelievable. And I think he's had something ridiculous in terms of number of clean sheets over the last 15 games or so. So, yeah, he's come out of nowhere. It's that horse, isn't it? The back of the field that all of a sudden comes out of nowhere and pips them on the line.
Very exciting now with just a few games to spare. Will Norris, surely, after holding the lead for so long, can't let it slip.
No, I don't know. It's one of these where you feel like, you know, certainly teams are at the top of the table the whole season. And another team comes and takes them. But so often you'll see that team, i.e. Leicester. You know, I think Leicester will now go on and do it. They had their little blip and they'll now kick on and do it. I think that Will Norris, he's been there for so long. You know, he's led the way for so long. I've just got a feeling they're going to get a few more clean sheets back into the season. So I think Lucas Jensen is going to have to keep up this good form if he wants to claim it.
Okay, Richard, just to finish, a couple of extra bits and pieces. Firstly, the Old Firm took place yesterday. Really good game, this. Jack Butland versus Joe Hart. Like that contest. Both played really well. I thought it started with a Hart assist inside the opening 20 seconds and a lovely tip over from Butland from Matt O'Reilly's header in the first half. There was an argument to suggest he could have moved slightly quicker for the third Celtic goal from Adam Ida. Much to talk about, though, throughout with regarding a potential England call-up because Gareth Southgate was there watching on, wasn't he?
He was, and it was interesting. I watched this as well, and it was what was quite nice was the commentators were so positive towards both of them, really, on the whole, which, you know, I'll be honest, I haven't watched loads and loads of Scottish football this year, but certainly the games I've seen, they've both done very, very well. So it was really nice to see them up against each other. Top save from Butland to his left-hand side. And yeah, the third one, and I felt from when I saw it, and I thought it'll be one that he will be annoyed with or disappointed with, but it's also like a really, really tricky one because it's so close in. It's struck with force, and it's right in that little avenue where you can't quite get a foot out to it, and similarly, you can't get a hand down to it. It's in that little avenue, so I don't know how much more he does with this. Maybe he could have got a foot out and just about got something on it. I don't know. Would that have made more sense? But again, it's a split-second thing, and certainly Jack Butland, like most keepers, the natural tendency is to go with your hand. You know, we talk about goalkeepers now, a lot of younger goalkeepers that seem to be using their feet a lot more to make saves. So, yeah, I certainly wouldn't have it down as an error or anything like that. And at the same time, I do think it is the type of goal that someone of Jack Butland's quality will probably look at and think, okay, what could I have done differently next time? But as I said, top save to his left. And yeah, I don't know, if it Joe Hart assist, I mean, I'm happy with that. I mean, if we're honest, it wasn't, but I'm more than happy with that. And that was a real freak goal. You could see how annoyed Jack Butland was, because he was obviously asking for the ball to be played back to him. The defender, in some ways, you can't criticise the defender, because if you're not sure, then, you know, the advice is, well, just kick it into the stands and then we'll argue about it afterwards, which is exactly what he's tried to do. And again, what are the chances to kick it onto their player in the way that he did, and it to fire past Jack Butland? And again, Jack Butland naturally isn't set in that moment, because he's hoping for a back pass and there's just very little he can do.
What just the reasoning behind you saying it's not an assist? What is that, because you're saying the defender kicked it onto the attacker?
That's what happened, yes. No, look, I'm happy for it to be an assist. I'll be delighted if I go on Flash Scores in a minute and it's got Joe Hart's name in brackets, but I know it won't. It wasn't an assist.
You're so funny with this sort of stuff, because you defend goalkeepers to the hilt, sometimes too much, let's be honest, on this podcast. Yet with assists, you're so tight. You're so stingy. You don't want to give goalkeepers the credit. Look, it is bizarre.
I'm saying I want to give him credit, but I would be the only one, me and you would be the only two giving him credit. It's not an assist. Like, according to, and this is black and white, an assist is that the ball's played into you, there's no one else that touches a ball, and you score a goal. That's an assist. He's kicked it long, great clearance, and he's spotted, you know, the 1v1 situation. The defender's gone to clear it, so the defender has definitely touched it, more than touched it, and it's hit the player and gone in. So, of course, it's not officially an assist, but I would be delighted if it was given so.
All right, mate, it's fine. Just, you know, I'm just thinking, don't look a gift horse in the mouth, okay?
Okay.
If we can take it, we'll take it.
Fair enough.
Gaelic goalkeeper Charlie Smith of County Down recently signed with the New Orleans Saints to become a kicker in the NFL. I don't know whether you saw this. He took part in an international player pathway program, which ended with him securing a 3-year contract. He's 22 years old, and he will, if he plays in the NFL, become the first Irish-born person to do it, which is quite the achievement. And interestingly, we spoke to Josh Lambeau, didn't we, a few weeks back, who was a goalkeeper in the US, who transitioned into being a kicker in the NFL. So there is previous here.
I love that. I actually missed that story. So thank you for bringing that to my attention, because that was always the one. I know David James went over, didn't he, years ago had like a training session of sorts. And you kind of look at these keepers like an Edison, and you just think the way that he booms it, surely transferable skills to then be able to do that with an American football. You know, someone like Edison surely would be incredible at that particular job. And what a great job as well. You know, you come on a handful of times during the game, and as long as you've got the mentality in those dying minutes to kick the winning field goal, you can get a lot of love, a lot of praise. You can also get a lot of criticism, of course, if you miss the winning field goal. But no, good luck to him, and I really hope he breaks through and gets some games for New Orleans Saints.
There was one experience of this, wasn't there, in the 90s that I always seem to recall, but it wasn't a goalkeeper, it was a striker, Clive Allen. Remember him?
He did it.
I believe he played for the London
Monarchs. Yeah,
Monarchs.
I used to go London Monarchs. I really enjoyed that. I remember, what was this? Do you know what? I'm not going to bore you now, but there was a song that then, it stuck in my head. I've completely forgotten it now, but every time they scored a touchdown, I remember the Monarchs, when I went and watched them, they were brilliant as well. And yeah, Clive Allen was the kicker.
Yeah. Okay, finishing up on the FA Trophy final, because it sees an old goalkeeper return to Wembley as a manager. Rob Elliott has led Gateshead to the non-league showpiece. They will face Solihull Moors, who we should mention at the weekend beat Bromley in a big win away at Bromley. And Nick Hayes with a huge save late on in that one.
Yeah, no, great save from Nick up to his left-hand side. So pleased for Nick as well, because he's really done the rounds. You know, he came through at Ipswich, went to Norwich, went to Salford, went to Hemel Hempstead, back to Ipswich, effectively in a training role of sorts. And now this season, gone on loan to Southend, did very, very well. Now on loan at Solihull, and he's doing brilliantly there. And to have the opportunity to play at Wembley, it's a really nice story, in that you know, so many goalkeepers that I speak to where, look, things can go south very quickly in goalkeeping, let's be honest. And before you know it, you can be sliding down the leagues and wondering where that opportunity might come from. But it's just a nice example that they are out there, and suddenly, yeah, it can come when you least expect it. And now for Nick, who at the start of the season was still in that sort of training role with Ipswich, has a good number of National League games under his belt, looking forward to a Wembley appearance as well, all being well. Yeah, really, really happy for him. And Rob Elliott, great for him as well. Like you say, ex-goalkeeper taking over at Gateshead. And you certainly thought when he took over that Gateshead might fall away in the National League, given the work that Mike Williamson did. But they've just kicked on. I think they're fourth at the moment. They're doing so, so well in the National League on pretty much the lowest budget in the division, and now to make a Wembley final as well. Delighted for him, and he's certainly showing that he is quite the manager as well as goalkeeper.
Okay, Richard, this has been fantastic. You are returning to these shores for a few weeks, I believe. So, as always, if you are a fan of the Goalkeepers Union podcast, or indeed of Richard Lee, keep a beady eye out, because you might just see him roaming the streets.
I might be at a game near you very soon indeed.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, keepers.
Oh, wait.